Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. Are some people just born evil, or does our world and what we encounter in life turn us evil? Philosophers, writers, religious scholars, and psychologists have pondered these questions since time immemorial. And they're at the heart of Waukesha writer Kathy Giorgio's latest novel, Learning to Tell a Lifetime. It's the follow-up to her award-winning 2011 book, The Home for Wayward Clocks. In that first story, abused and neglected teen Cooley finds care, compassion, and friendship from an isolated old man named James, who incidentally runs a clock museum. Giorgio tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce she hadn't intended to write a sequel to Cooley's initial story.
No, and in fact, during the book tour for The Home for Wayward Clocks, I was asked all the time, are you going to do a sequel? And I said, absolutely not. Because it took me 3 years to write the clock book. It took me 3 years to sell it. So I'd been out of it for a very, very long time. This book is an accidental book. I was at a warm stone massage. And I was actually 176 pages into another book that I was writing, so I had no thought of doing anything. And I'm laying there on the massage table. I'm totally blissed out. I'm face down. And all of a sudden, the opening line, Cooley never expected to cry when her mother died, came across my eyes. And I swore. And the massage therapist said, what? Did I hurt you? And I said, no, I have to go home and write a book. And by the time the therapy or the massage therapy was done, I knew it was 16 years later. I knew Cooley was 32. I knew James had passed away. He was not going to be a part of this book. I knew that Ione was in a progressive type home, which starts with assisted living and then goes to a nursing home. And I knew that her mother had just died. And that's all I knew. But it was enough to go home and start working on it.
As an author, were you afraid to disturb where you had left these characters? I mean, at the end of The Home for Wayward Clocks, we kind of have a sweet ending mm-hmm. with Cooley going to live with James and that relationship really blossoming. But instead of just leaving them there in that kind of permanent, happy place, you go ahead and you write this book, dredging up Cooley's...
All sorts of stuff.
All sorts of things.
I was scared. Partly because, number one, it seems when people read a sequel, they always say, oh, it was pretty good, but the first one was better. And I absolutely don't want that to happen, which is why I think the sequel stands on its own. You do not have to read The Home for Wayward Clocks in order to read this book. But it was also the idea in my head was that we have James in The Home for Wayward Clocks who had a severely abused childhood. And who reacted to it by becoming completely isolated from the world. Then as I wrote this book, I discovered Cooley's mother had also a pretty bad background, different from James, but still a rough background. And her way of dealing with it was to start abusing Cooley. And now here's Cooley, who has been raised by this woman and saved by James. And I was like, there has to be one more step. There has to be a step to show that you can step away from that kind of background and live a completely normal life. And so I had to go back and write about her.
Now, as Cooley begins to learn about her mother and her mother's past in a way that she'd never been interested, inclined to learn about before, given that she was abused at the hands of her mother, we begin to learn what her mother experienced.
Right.
Are we meant to like her, to forgive her for what she's done to Cooley?
You are not meant to forgive her. You know, you are meant to learn how this could happen. How could a woman become someone who could burn her child with cigarettes? And, I mean, when I started to write this book, that wasn't even my intention. When I did the clock book, Cooley's mother was Cooley's mother. She didn't even have a name. She was just somebody who burned her child with cigarettes and who was an alcoholic. When I started this book and I knew I wanted the short stories to be concerning her mother, I didn't expect to like her. I didn't expect to feel for her. But I did as the story started to come out. It's really my first time writing from the abusive mind as opposed to the abused mind. And I learned so much about this in that she was a person. She was a child. And she was not born evil. She is not a monster. She became a monster. And things happened to her to lead her down that path. And I think that's what I'm trying to show more than anything, is that whenever we have bad things happen in our country, our first response is, oh, that's evil. And we point fingers and we say that person is evil. that person isn't evil. That person maybe became evil, but certainly wasn't born that way. And we need to know more about how did we get from here to there? How did this person become that way? Because we can dole out all the punishment we want. That's only going to stop that person. It's not going to keep the next person from developing that way.
That's interesting you say that. Do you have particular events in mind that you're referring to?
You know, especially while I was writing it, we had a lot of things happen in this country. We had the man who went in and shot up the movie theater. We had Sandy Hook. We had the Boston Marathon kids. We now have Castro with keeping the three women kidnapped. And just
and
a couple
Sikh temple shooting
exactly.
Right here in our own backyard.
Yes. And just recently, just 2 weeks ago, when Castro was put into prison for life for doing this, he made a statement that said, "You're making me look like a monster. I'm not a monster. I'm sick." And everybody was very horrified at that statement. And in fact, both are true. He is sick and he became a monster. They aren't mutually exclusive. And I hope what will happen with him in prison now for life is that there will be a whole lot of talking going on to figure out how did this man wake up one morning and decide to do this? Something made him turn left instead of going right. And in this book, too, something made Mara Rose on. I wrote the chapter about the very first time she burns Cooley. Hardest chapter of the book to write, because at that point, I knew this character really well, and I so wanted her not to do it. I wanted her to save herself. I couldn't do that. You know, I had to kind of stick with the first book, but I had to make her go through with it and watch her do it and realize this is where she makes her big mistake. This is where the mind bends, and she starts to go down that path instead of staying on the straight and narrow.
You juxtapose two scenes, one a rape scene, mm-hmm. one a scene of statutory rape, molestation. And in the first book, you had written so much about physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Is it different to write about sexual abuse versus physical abuse?
I think it is. What I found the most compelling as I wrote this book, and I did a lot of research with this. I visited therapy groups that were dealing with people who had childhood sexual abuse. And one of the things that I think everybody finds the hardest to understand and to believe is that often that person doesn't hate the person that did it to them. There is a feeling of love for this person. There's a feeling, in a lot of cases, of gratitude. And that was certainly the case with Mara Rose. She was neglected by her mother. But here was this neighbor man who stepped forward and was lavishing all sorts of attention on her. And she loved him. She wanted to grow up and marry him. And it wasn't until much later that she realized the relationship was bad. The relationship was one that never, ever should have happened. And that's so hard for people to understand. And you'll never see it on a Lifetime TV movie, having an abused victim come forward and say, "But I loved my abuser. I really wanted to be with my abuser." Because you don't think of it as abuse when you're a kid.
Do you think you were able at first to really understand?
No. I think I understood it as I wrote the book and got more into it and got into that head. And, you know, I juxtapose the two. In Mara Rose's case, she always wants to get back to that man. She always wants to be with him. She wishes – he ends up dying in the book. She wonders what would have happened if she had made it to 18 and they were able to have a legal relationship. She always refers back to that as being – something she misses. In Cooley's case, she gets seduced by an internet stalker who she thinks is a young boy who is 1 year older than she is. Turns out he's a much older man and he rapes her. But in her mind, she still thinks of that boy that she knew on the internet. It's very hard for her to separate the two. And she still misses him. Even though he ended up not being who he was supposed to be, in her mind, she misses that boy.
And to a certain extent, she's surprised when she realizes after she finds out her mother has died that she loves that abuser as well.
Right, right.
What pushes Cooley to want to explore who her mother was, the part of her mother that she didn't know about?
There's at the beginning of the book, one of the things she finds is an old photo album. And she sees a picture of her mother as a young girl sitting on the front porch looking straight ahead and just as wide-eyed and innocent as she can be. And that child is so different than the mom Cooley knew. And there was something about seeing that little girl that made her want to know, who was this woman? Why did she turn out the way she turned out? Why couldn't she have been a mother to me? And that's what fueled her forward. She realized all these things she didn't know about her mom. She didn't know if her grandparents were still alive. She didn't know where her mother came from. She didn't know anything. She hadn't spoken to her mother for 16 years. And that was what pushed her forward. I think also suddenly being on her own. There are no more parents. James is gone. Ione is on the way out. And she realizes here she is in the world and she's not sure where her ties are. And so she needed to reach out.
You know, these days in movies and television, even books, we see a lot of violence against women depicted. And it's not always handled with the best of care, but in this case, in your book, you seem like you have a bigger mission in mind by using those elements to reach out to your readers in a certain way.
I guess I'm trying to do so much, I think, in this book, in that what I started out with talking about how I want to show that there isn't just good and evil, that there is all of these things in between. I do get frustrated whenever there is a big news event because it seems like as soon as we say that person was evil, it's like we're removing responsibility from ourselves as well. We couldn't possibly have changed that. We couldn't have seen that coming. We couldn't have stepped in and stopped these things from happening. That person was evil. There was no stopping them. I'd like to stop that. You know, I think there is a way of stepping in and preventing these things. In Cooley's case, you know, I can remember back in – I was a teenager. It was probably around 1976 was when the first statistics came forward that if you were abused, you were likely to become an abuser. And I remember even thinking at the time, man, that must feel like a life sentence. Not only have you been abused, but you're going to grow up to hurt other people too. There are boatloads of people out there who have been in abusive situations who have not gone on to hurt other people. We need to know why. You know, why do some people continue that chain? Why do they lose control and go ahead and keep this thing going where others will step out of that same situation and stop and be able to stop it? The more we learn about that, the more we can make it stop right away rather than continuing the whole thing.
Well, Kathy Giorgio, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about Learning to Tell a Lifetime.
Thank you.
Kathy Giorgio is the author of the new novel, Learning to Tell a Lifetime, which is being released on September 1st. It's a sequel to her first novel, The Home for Wayward Clocks, and she's also the author of the short story collection, Enlarged Hearts. Giorgio will be the keynote speaker at the 2013 Southeast Wisconsin Festival of Books on September 20th. You can find more of their conversation about this book at WUWM.com. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're back tomorrow at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect right here on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. See you then. Stay tuned for Fresh Air Now. It's coming up next.